The Broadway Hour. This is Stuart Klein. Stay tuned for a live discussion on the arts with Mayor Giuliani, part of 60 minutes of very live conversation all about the theater, here on The Broadway Hour on AM 93 WPAT, every Monday night from 6 to 7, brought to you by Sheraton New York Hotel and Towers. Good evening and welcome to The Broadway Hour. I'm Stuart Klein, your host for the next hour of the talk of Broadway, some Broadway music, and much ado about off-Broadway, too. We're coming to you from the Sheraton New York Hotel and Towers at 53rd Street, overlooking scenic 7th Avenue, where we have our live taping in the posh Lobby Court Lounge. Yes, I said posh, and I'm going to stick with it. You're invited to join us for the taping every Thursday afternoon from 5 to 6. We have a rather distinguished audience here tonight and some very distinguished guests. Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who'll be discussing his plans on helping the theater, and the mayor will be joined by Jerry Schoenfeld, chairman of the Schubert Organization, and George Wachtel, director of research for the League of American Theaters and Producers. So stay tuned for the talk of Broadway, a touch of Broadway music, and our trivia contest with a chance for you to win some excellent prizes. And now a word from our sponsor, Sheraton New York Hotel and Towers. This is Stuart Klein, and it's a pleasure for me to introduce our first guest, who recently made his acting debut in the annual Inner Circle show. He's the chief executive of the City of New York. Ladies and gentlemen, Mayor Rudy Giuliani. Mr. Mayor, welcome to the Broadway Hour.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
And how would you review your performance in the Inner Circle show?
In one evening, it was the beginning and the end of a career.
Well, you're a little harsh on yourself. I saw the show, and as a professional critic, I would say your performance was adequate.
That's about the best anybody's done in a long time in New York City, actually, with critics.
Mr. Mayor, I've read that you're an opera lover. Is that accurate?
Yep, I'm an opera lover. I love opera, yeah.
What's your favorite operas and singers?
Well, my favorite opera is probably Otello. Uh-huh. And my favorite singers, I have lots of favorite singers.
Okay.
I love tenors. So Placido Domingo and Luciano Pavarotti are favorite singers. And I go back 30 or 40 years with tenors that I really love their voices, and I've collected their records and listened to them when I want to relax.
Did you go to see Domingo at the opening of Otello at the Met the other night?
I haven't seen Otello yet. I've seen him in Otello earlier. I haven't seen him in the new production yet.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, are you a theater goer?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, have been for many, many years.
You go frequently?
About as frequently as I can, which as when you're mayor isn't terribly frequently, but I even remember my first play.
Which was?
It was Beckett.
Okay.
With Anthony Quinn and Laurence Olivier. And it was an absolutely overpowering performance to see both of them on the live stage.
That was, I guess, the early 60s, huh?
I think it was 1960, maybe 1961. Sounds about right.
How often do you get to the theater? Two or three times a
year?
Yeah,
about right. About four times a year.
Okay. Have you taken young Andrew to a Broadway show yet?
We've taken Andrew to see Peter Pan as a live Broadway show, and he sat still and listened to it. And he's really looking forward to Beauty and the Beast, and so is Caroline, actually even more, because she's more at the stage where that play would be one that she really loved the movie, so she's looking forward to it.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, let's get to some civic matters. What are you doing to aid the city's cultural institutions in general and the theater in particular?
Well, what we're trying to do is to get a lot more attention for the city's cultural institutions so that people pay attention to the fact that New York City, with whatever problems that we have, is still the cultural center of the world in every respect, whether we're talking about drama or music or dance or performing arts, other arts. New York is still the center of the world for culture. And we're trying to get a lot more attention for that, specifically with money, even though we're going through very, very difficult budget balancing problems, a big budget gap of $2.4 billion. Due to the really the creative program that John Dyson put together, we'll be able to spend more money in the cultural community next year than this year. We raised about $10 million in private money. We're going to match that with $5 million of city money and $5 million of state money. So there'll be at least $20 million more that we'll be able to spend this year. And that is one of the few areas, maybe the only area, in which we'll actually be able to spend more money next year than we are this year. And we will try to use it to help both the established institutions that need help and then some of the smaller institutions that are trying to come along and trying to develop themselves.
The larger institutions, of course, I guess means the Metropolitan Museum and places like that. When you say the smaller places, what are they?
Well, the groups in the different neighborhoods of New York City and the different boroughs that are attempting to develop either in the area of music or drama or areas really in which they're trying to help children and arts programs. The city now spends about $80 million altogether in pursuit of those objectives. And if this program works the way we believe it will, we should be able to increase that spending and also encourage some of the smaller institutions to stabilize themselves. Because given the fact that so many additional people are now donating money in this private-public partnership, some of them are willing to take over and to try to help these institutions establish a fundraising base for themselves. So it should help, once again, kind of reestablish the core of New York City as a diverse cultural city.
What is the total figure on your cultural budget for this year?
Well, the total figure independent of this particular program would be about $76-78 million. With this program, it would get close to $100 million.
And you say this does not represent your stated 4.5% cut on all city programs?
No, what happened is, because these private donors came along, we were able to restore the cut, and we were able to raise another $5 million of city money, the effect of it being that we get $10 million of private money and $5 million of state money. So although in almost every area of the budget, we're either remaining stable or reducing, in that particular area, we're going to have a rather substantial increase, which I think is very, very good for the city, because I look on the cultural institutions of New York City, obviously, including Broadway, as doing two things for the city. One, obviously, defining the city as a very special place and contributing to the heart and soul of the city. But second, this is a major industry for New York now. This is an industry that employs people, brings dollars to New York City, increases tax revenues. You could say that the cultural industry is to New York in the 1990s what the steel industry was to Pittsburgh in the 1950s. And we have to look at it that way. So if I'm spending money on that side of the budget, I'm really increasing jobs for people. And we desperately need jobs.
Mr. Mayor, we will pursue this in just a minute. First, a little business. This is the Broadway Hour on AM 93 WPAT. I'm Stuart Klein, and with me is Mayor Rudy Giuliani. Mr. Mayor, one of the parameters of the health of the Broadway area is the Times Square District. There have been some uplifting works done in removing some of the sexual places on 42nd Street. And now the Disney people are trying to refurbish the New Amsterdam Theater on 42nd Street. But I, for one, personally, still find walking along 42nd Street rather menacing. What's your view of that area?
Well, I think this is actually a good illustration of something that could go in either direction right now. The good news is, if you compare 42nd Street to 7-8 years ago, it's improved and it's doing much better. Roughly half of 42nd Street is stabilized. The other half is still in deep trouble. The question is, which direction is it going to go in now? Unfortunately, the recession hasn't provided the kind of capital dollars that people expected were going to be spent there. But I still think a lot of progress has been made. Now, the Disney company coming to the New Amsterdam Theater really very, very helpful in stabilizing 42nd Street, and I hope kind of pushing it over the top so that we'll end up with a few more live theaters there, other attractions there that will be family attractions and decent tourist attractions. In a way, Times Square helps to define New York City. And as far as security is concerned, that's an area in which the New York City Police Department will put a special focus to try to see what we can do to create a safer situation and to keep showing a continuing and increasing quality of life in that area. So I'm hoping that the next couple of years will be the turning point for 42nd Street.
Family attractions on 42nd Street. That Disney, sounds like utopia.
The Disney company took a big risk here, and we have to kind of support them. I was at the press conference, Governor Cuomo and I, the day that they announced they were going to do this, and there was a good deal of cynicism in the press about this. In fact, Michael Eisner was even asked, you know, how could you possibly be doing this with the prostitutes on 42nd Street? And I was almost afraid he was going to change his mind by the time the press got finished with him. But he's a very determined man, and a very, I think he's got a very strong sense. He sees 42nd Street. He sees it, you know, kind of like split in half. Here's a street that has been brought back halfway, and the other half is still in bad condition. And I think he realizes that the Disney company could play a really pivotal role in just flipping it right over and moving it in the direction in which this could be really a positive thing for New York, terrific for New York.
Mr. Mayor, as some of these outfits have been closed down on 42nd Street, I've noticed a proliferation of adult video stores on 8th Avenue in the Broadway district. Can there be any, given First Amendment rights, could there be any legislation saying that such an establishment could not be opened so many feet from a school or a church?
There is legislation now in the city council that's been debated maybe for a year, year and a half, 2 years, about trying to create zoning, more restrictive zoning regulations like that, so that, in essence, you'd create a few districts here and there for people to do that if that's what they wanted to do, but so that in other areas you could start to develop a much more positive presentation of the city. It's being debated in the city council. Maybe even in the next couple of months something will pass, and then we'll take a look at it and see if we can figure out a way to do it within the Constitution. I think there is.
This is Stuart Klein on the Broadway Hour, and joining us now are the inimitable Jerry Schoenfeld, chairman of the Schubert Organization, who for years has admired my critical reviews, and George Wachtel, research director of the League of American Producers and Theaters. Jerry, you've been listening to what the mayor has said so far. Do you have any comments about his ideas on the theater?
I look forward to really the city and the state formulating together with the Broadway community, theater community, a plan which will really result in the long-term preservation of the Broadway theater. I believe the mayor is committed to that. I believe the governor is committed to that. He said so in the State of the State message. And I think that we will be hopefully meeting with the mayor and the governor's representatives to that end.
Mr. Mayor, the governor, as a matter of fact, said that he would join with the city in providing funds to establish a fund that would help Broadway produce shows. But I haven't heard anything about it since then. Are you aware of...
Well, we'll follow up on that. There is... there are a lot of very good things that so far we've done, including the Disney project, which wasn't moving very fast, but the governor and I have worked out a very good working relationship. John Dyson, who is my deputy mayor for economic development, has worked very effectively with Vincent Tese, who performs that function for the governor. So this will be something we'll follow up on and see if we can't do something. I think what we've shown is, in at least three or four situations, that we can move things a lot faster than had previously been the case.
George Wachtel, is there a message you have for the mayor?
Well, the first message I have is how thrilled they are that the mayor is here today. Mayor Giuliani is the first mayor in my recall to pay quite so much attention to the theater and the theater district, and we're very grateful for that. One of the messages I would like to get across today is that, as the mayor said earlier, culture is very important to the city of New York, and Broadway in particular. Broadway is responsible for 60% of all the tourism spending that is comes about as a result of visiting the city because of culture. Broadway generates 25,000 jobs in the city of New York and an economic impact of $2.3 billion. And it is, as the mayor said, very significant for the city. As he said, the steel industry for the 90s. It is a very important industry, and I think the citizenry of the city should acknowledge that is an important reason why government is concerned about Broadway theater.
I think he just made a very soft pitch to you,
Mr. Mayor, and a very effective one.
Mr. Mayor, one of the things that mayors should be aware of is the Tony Awards. I think in the 12 years that Ed Koch was in office, he never attended the Tony Awards.
No, he did attend.
He did?
He did attend.
He
didn't? Yes, he did attend, and I think, though, that the attention of the mayor to the theater is really manifested in many ways, and going to the Broadway shows and the openings is very significant for us because it does show a recognition and a commitment to the theater, and I really look forward to you seeing you at many of our openings.
I'm going to be at Carousel.
When?
Great. Tonight.
Tonight.
Mm-hmm. You get free tickets?
It's one of my favorites.
You get free tickets, Mr. Mayor?
I always pay for tickets.
Really?
Uh-huh. I always find a way to do it, even if I have to make a contribution.
I'll be darned. Yeah. Why don't you break down and give him a couple of free tickets, Jerry Jones?
I would love to have him as our guest at any time.
Okay. You're going to the Tony Awards, Mr. Mayor?
Am I invited?
You are invited. You will receive your invitation.
All right.
And it will be, again, our pleasure, and we think you'll have a great time.
You think I'll get a nomination for my performance at the Inner Circle? What do you think?
If I wasn't nominated for an Oscar in Broadway, Danny Rose, you and I are in the same boat.
Mr. Mayor, this is what we would call in the showbiz argo chutzpah. let me ask you this, Mr. Mayor. This was noted in the Village Voice recently. Broadway brings in $2.3 billion, as George Wachtel just mentioned, to the city economy. All the sports teams in New York together, the Yankees, the Mets, the Rangers, the Knicks, if you put all of their contribution to the city's economy, plus their attendance, all together, it still would be a drop in the bucket compared to what Broadway produces. Yet, the sports teams, the Mets, the Yankees, Madison Square Garden, get a huge property tax break each year. They are exempt from paying some property taxes, which the Village Voice estimated to be as much as $10 million a year in the case of the Garden and the Shea Stadium. Why aren't these people paying taxes?
Well, they are paying taxes, and sometimes the Village Voice tax accounting is not the most accurate.
Okay.
That isn't one of their strengths. So I'd have to really take a look at that before I accepted it. And the best way to do the economic development of the city is not to kind of diminish an area that is important to us to help another area that's important to us. Sports teams are very important to us. Broadway is very important to us. And those four teams that you just mentioned not only bring economic value to New York City, but like Broadway, they advertise New York City all over the country. When the Knicks or the Rangers or the Yankees or the Mets play someplace, they advertise New York City. They give a positive focus to New York City. They create reasons for people to come here. And then, like Broadway, when they have good years, like if we ever get lucky and we have a playoff and a World Series here, they bring a lot of economic value and a great deal of national attention here. So these are also very valuable things for the city.
A playoff or World Series among the sports teams and family attractions on 42nd Street.
Yeah, it's great. It'd be great. If we could only get back to the Subway Series again every year, it would be absolutely fabulous for New York.
Jerry Schoenfeld, Mayor Giuliani has mentioned this fund shared by the city and the state to help promote Broadway. How would you like to see that promotion done?
Well, I have my own ideas. We are, though, forming and have formed a coalition between the League of American Theaters and Producers and our theatrical unions in order to prepare an agreed-upon agenda so that we have a consistent point of view. And indeed, that's what we will be presenting in due course to the mayor and to the governor. And we'll hope that will serve as a basis for the plan that was originally intended to emerge in 1982 as the result of the then Theater Advisory Council, and never did. But I look forward really now, in view of this commitment, to the realization of that. And I think it's something now whose time has come.
Great. I think that's terrific.
Well, would this plan actually help to produce plays?
I think the plan will actually help to produce plays. I think the plan will also involve suggestions with respect to zoning initiatives. I think it will also have other suggestions with respect to tax considerations. And I don't mean to think of any diminution of the city's treasury in that regard. But I think it will have many worthwhile suggestions, a number of which have been created years ago, as I said, but not implemented. They're really not secret, but they just have never really been thoroughly discussed with the city and the state. And I think, as I say, this is an idea whose time has arrived.
George Wachtel?
And they have the support of the unions and the entire theater industry behind them. It is an industry-based program.
I want to add one other thing. I want to really commend the mayor in this time of budget constraint for continuing the Office of Midtown Enforcement, which is an essential city agency resulting in the enhancement of this district. And I really think you did a major commitment, made a major commitment
in that regard.
It
is very, very valuable. I mean, all of it starts with a sense of public safety. If you don't have that, then all of these other plans aren't going to really do very much. And we're very committed, not only me, but the police commissioner, Bill Bratton, to trying to increase every day, every week, every month. Let's keep increasing the sense of public safety. We're going to have terrible incidents that occur, like the murders that occurred yesterday and the attempted murder that occurred on 77th Street. But we got to keep fighting back. We have to keep having more police present, more of a sense of physical safety. And we have a police commissioner that is really very, very good at that. So I want to support him.
I do, and I think also, you just take a look outside the window here, Stuart, and you see clean streets, and you see the new buildings, and you really see a new environment, and this is the vital part of New York insofar as future economic development and contributions to the city's treasury is concerned. I have no doubt about that.
As I said at the outset, we overlook scenic 7th Avenue.
That's correct.
You gentlemen keep talking about the future. What would you like to see Mayor Giuliani do tomorrow for Broadway if you had the chance to ask him to do it?
I don't think that I would ask him to do more than to create a sense of recognition on the part of the city administration, which I think he has done and is continuing to do, of the importance of the Broadway Theater to the vitality, economic vitality, as well as cultural vitality of this city. And it will pay handsome dividends if that is done.
Well, he's recognizing that tonight.
I think that's an absolutely terrific agenda. And I also think maybe I can get a couple of good reviews here and there. It wouldn't be a bad idea. Like, if they'd give us some good reviews sometimes.
We all live in hope.
As they say in the Bronx, Gunnish health. Well, Mr. Mayor, you're going to see Carousel tonight.
Yep, looking forward to it. It's one of my favorites, one of my all-time favorites.
Beautiful music.
Yeah, very hard to get through the last scene without crying, right? It's one of the great ones. Yeah.
You'll never walk alone.
Yeah.
As they say down at
it's a great one.
City Hall. Anything else you'd care to add, Mr. Mayor?
No, I think this has been great, and I really enjoyed it very much. And sitting here and looking at the people walking on 7th Avenue, is really it's a very nice view here. It's terrific.
Well, that's why we do it from the shirt.
It's great.
Mayor Rudy Giuliani, has been a distinct pleasure for me to be able to speak to you about the theater, and let's hope that some of these plans for the future bear fruition.
I assure you they will.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mayor Rudy Giuliani.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more after this. We're back on the Broadway Hour. This is Stuart Klein. We're on AM 93 WPAT. Jerry Schoenfeld and George Wachtel, are you happy with the mayor's pronouncements?
Very. Extremely so.
You didn't say much about the city giving a big tax subsidy to the Disneys for refurbishing the New Amsterdam Theater on 42nd Street while you get nothing.
Well, no.
Okay.
Now, I want to say that I really think that as far as Disney is concerned and 42nd Street is concerned, that is a plus for New York. The reservation that I had was, if something is going to be done for Disney, there should be something done for the Broadway Theater. Not because of
quid pro quo?
I wouldn't say it's a quid pro quo. I think it's a recognition, really, of what the Broadway Theater means to the city. Disney has been recognized as doing something for the city. We have done something for the city, and I think that that has now been recognized. And it took perhaps a Disney as a catalyst for a plan to evolve for the helping of the Broadway Theater. So in that regard, that is to us the silver lining. And I look forward to Disney on 42nd Street. I think Disney will be a catalyst for other entities coming to 42nd Street. Without the development of 42nd Street, this area will never be able to achieve the kind of vitality that it should have. 42nd Street is still a sore in the center of the heart of New York. And that sore, I think, will be eliminated with Disney, and as a consequence of Disney, the Broadway Theater will also have reinforcement and be able to continue in the role that it has occupied in the life of the city.
Well, I hope you're right, but all of this sounds truly like dreamland to me.
Well, you know, Stuart,
to think that 42nd Street could ever be cleaned up. Well, let's suppose that theater is refurbished. I think it's still got a long way to go to clean it all up.
Well, it took us 20 or more years to achieve what we have achieved in Times Square. And when we started, and I looked around here because I saw Dick Oliver here for a few moments ago, the cynicism that greeted the initiation of the Mayor's Midtown Citizens Committee at that time, which had as its mission, really, the creation of a climate conducive to the redevelopment of this area, was enormous, much more so than the idea that Broadway, or that the 42nd Street could be reclaimed.
I'm not saying it's impossible. I mean, just think of what happened to Lincoln Center. Who could ever imagine?
But Stuart, we've seen more false starts on 42nd Street than any place in the world, and I think it's everybody's belief at this time that it's truly going to happen. Also, one of the misperceptions about 42nd Street, except for its name, is really an avenue that runs all the way from the United Nations to the Circle Line cruise of the Hudson River. And there's only this one block that stretches between 7th and 8th Avenue that has had these consistent problems over the years, albeit it's the anchor of the theater district. But the message that's gotten out is not quite a representative one. It is an avenue that houses not only great entertainment, but great universities and libraries and thriving businesses and corporate headquarters. So we are talking simply about one part of a great avenue. I don't think this is something that will not happen soon.
There's another variation of Gresham's law at work here, which we have learned over the years. Bad uses attract bad uses, and good uses attract good uses. And when I can think back of massage parlors, peep shows, burlesque houses, wall-to-wall prostitutes on the streets, the condition of this area was so outrageous that it was a deterrent to people and to tourists coming here. That has changed now. And although 42nd Street needs to change, I have now a really strong opinion that it will change and that Disney was the catalyst for this change. And as I say, the silver lining or the dividend of that will be that Broadway Theater will be reinforced and that these theaters here, which are treasures, 70 to 90 years old, will be able to endure. And if you take a look at another aspect of it, the Broadway Theater is probably the only non-subsidized, tax-paying performing arts in America. Most all theater, dance, music, and opera is subsidized. We are not. We don't look for subsidy, but we do look for certain other considerations, which I say were on the drawing boards and never realized. One, for instance, would be a program of air rights transfers.
Which would mean practically what?
Which would mean that the undeveloped rights over a theater could be moved to another site where a larger building could be erected. And as a consequence of that, the theater would have a fund to preserve itself, and the city would receive many more tax dollars because of a new structure being built on another site, which might not otherwise be built.
That cannot be done now?
No, it cannot be done because transfers are restricted to properties that are either adjacent or across the street from a landmark theater. But you can't move, for instance, air rights from 44th Street to 46th Street. You have developed, not you, but the city has developed an air rights transfer plan for Grand Central area. There is a plan that was developed some years ago for South Street Seaport, but there is no such plan in existence, and that's a hope, by the way, on our part, for the Broadway area. But a large number of these buildings do incorporate air rights, but they were as a consequence of being contiguous to a theater.
Okay.
And there are models for this in other cities. In Toronto, for example, which is now the second largest theater city in North America, air rights have been transferred to other parts of town, resulting in major renovations of two theaters. And using that model in New York City would greatly enhance the situation.
Gentlemen, we only have about a minute or so left. Jerry, how's Broadway doing in this harsh winter?
Well, this has really been a harsh winter for Broadway. I think in my experience, which goes back more than a few years, this involved about the worst 8 or 9 weeks that I can remember. And when people are really frightened about going out, and there's a sort of subliminal message, stay home and watch television, it's safer. The weather has been cruel. People have been reluctant to go out. Our business has been dreadful as a consequence. But it's improving now, and the spring is here, and as we all know, hope springs eternal in the human breast.
We will talk about the eternal hope of Broadway and what's coming up after this. This is the Broadway Hour on AM 93 WPAT. I'm Stuart Klein, and with me is George Wachtel and Jerry Schoenfeld, who just before the break referred to the human breast in which hope springs eternal. Tell me about this eternal hope on Broadway this spring, Jerry.
Well, practically every theater on Broadway is booked with a new show, and we think that this is something that has not happened in many, many years. We also think that there's a lot of excitement, and there's going to be a large number of people coming to see these shows.
What shows?
Well, I could start off going down in the street, for instance. There's Jackie Mason at the Golden. There's an Inspector Calls coming into the Royale. There's Passion, the new Sondheim Lupine show, going into the Plymouth.
Stop right there.
The Arthur
Jerry.
Miller show. And I could go on. I don't want to leave out anybody.
You've got two new musicals coming in. You mentioned one, Passion, and the other is Beauty and the Beast.
And the
we got the Texas Whorehouse.
That's the Whorehouse goes public. Yeah.
Now, Jerry, this season, there hasn't been a single new musical that has made it so far.
That is true.
I can't remember a season. Like, what has happened to the Broadway musical?
The Broadway musical, I think, unfortunately, has been impacted by age and AIDS.
What do you mean by age?
Well, I think that a large number of our people unfortunately died of old age. People like Lerner and Lowe, people like Rodgers and Hammerstein, and other great collaborations. But a large number of our creative people, especially directors like Michael Bennett and Gower Champion and Bob Fosse, have died.
Is there no one out there now writing good musical theater?
The arena where people can be trained to work in the Broadway theater was always the Broadway theater. Costs now are such that it is impossible to be experimental with new people on Broadway. So the place that they would look to is the Regional Theater of America. Most of the regional theaters of America do not have proscenium stages, do not have orchestra pits, do not have all of the amenities and facilities required to present a musical theater, a musical show. So consequently, the ability to train people in those venues simply has not existed. Now there is a sort of belated recognition of the musical, and hopefully there will be more venues and more people will learn the craft of doing a musical, which is the most difficult art form in my judgment. It's the most collaborative and most demanding.
Jerry, when you just said that it's impossible now to do anything new on Broadway, that is a very sad commentary.
No, it's not a sad comment, because Broadway used to try out its shows in venues like Philadelphia and Wilmington and Boston and Washington, and it can't do that any longer. The costs of originating a show in those venues and then transporting it to New York is now prohibitive. So we look to other venues to originate material which will ultimately find its way to Broadway. It is merely a replacement of a system that had a economic reality 20, 30, or 40 or longer ago, years ago. Today, this is a sort of new way of doing things. And the idea that Broadway doesn't originate and therefore it should be diminished in some way because it's not originating is, I think, an unfortunate burden that has been placed upon the Broadway theater. This is no different than what's happening now in England. And I think also it's resulted in a much closer interrelationship between all of the constituents of theater in America.
Well, I understand the economics involved. Of course, it's difficult to put on something new. But I think it's also a pointed comment about producers willing to take a chance, willing to stand up and invest their money and take a shot at developing something new. Are those people gone forever?
No, those people are not gone forever. They are putting money sometimes into off-Broadway. They're sometimes putting money into workshops. But if you're going to roll the dice, and producing a show is rolling the dice in many instances, you want to make sure that the odds are as favorable as you can get them. And if you can mount a show someplace under circumstances which not only economically conducive to the realization of a success, but also gives your creative people a venue where they can work and improve the product without being under the glare of the Broadway critic, who is a very harsh judge.
Do I hear critics being blamed for this?
No blame, just a recognition of the reality that exists. Then you are able to, I think, achieve a product which will come to Broadway in the best possible condition. It is still very difficult to originate a musical other than on Broadway, which is probably one of the reasons that some of these shows that you have alluded to did not succeed. If they had an opportunity to originate someplace else and be refined, they may have had a different life on Broadway.
Jerry, what you say has a lot of truth, but still, I miss a guy like David Merrick, who would take a property that he believed in and give it everything he got.
I think there are still producers who do that
today. I hope so, but I don't.
And there are a lot of young producers. I'm not quite as pessimistic.
Name one David Merrick show that originated cold on Broadway.
Well, most of the things he did. Gypsy, for heaven's sake. I mean,
shows tried out of town.
Oh, well, they tried it out of town.
Well, they're trying out of town now, but they're trying out in a different way and in different venues. They didn't try out in Washington or Boston. Now, they did then. Hello Dolly was opened in Detroit. Funny Girl opened in Philadelphia. 42nd Street, I forget, probably Washington. All of Merrick shows originated as tryouts in other cities. If David was producing shows today, he was too smart a man to come in cold in New York unless you have no alternative. Some shows do not have other alternatives, and that's why, for instance, the Red Shoes opened cold in New York. That's why we are opening other shows cold in New York.
Okay.
Leave you with two statistics. There's been remarkable consistency in the number of new musicals that have been mounted on Broadway since World War II, and that number is about 8 per season. And the other statistic is that despite the horrendous winter that New York City has had and its effect on the theater, more people will attend Broadway shows this season, the 93-94 season, than last season.
Well, I'm sure that's true, George, but what they are seeing is stuff that are revivals or stuff that are coming on from the past.
Classic shows like Carousel, which opens tonight, deserve to be done.
There's nothing wrong with that. I would just love to see something new, because I think one of the prime elements of theater is surprise, to go into a theater and see something you've never seen before.
Why doesn't television do their shows cold without having pilots? And how many pilots end up going on to the network? Very, very few. This is our pilot arrangement, if you will. And everything has to accommodate the economic realities of staying alive. And that's the way we're doing it.
Okay. Jerry, by the way, when you ask me about television, you're talking to a person with not quite much influence. In any event, I'd like to thank the two of you for joining us and helping us along with the comments of Mayor Giuliani. We've been talking to Jerry Schoenfeld, the chairman of the Schubert Organization, and George Wachtel, director of research for the League of American Theaters and Producers. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us. And we'll be back with the Broadway update and our trivia contest after this. This is Stuart Klein on the Broadway Hour, and here's the Broadway update brought to you by Taittinger Champagne, the official champagne of the Broadway Hour. Two new Broadway productions start previews this week. Getting underway tomorrow at the Longacre is Medea, with Diana Rigg in the title role, and a revival of Picnic, the Pulitzer Prize drama by William Inge, starts Wednesday at the Roundabout. Mort Saul, the comic barb of the Eisenhower years, is still going. Saul starts previews tomorrow of his new stand-up show, Mort Saul's America, at Theater 4. The show you've been waiting for, New York Rock, the rock musical with book, music, and lyrics by Yoko Ono, opens Wednesday at the WPA Theater. Another rock musical, Fallen Angel, by Billy Boesky, starts performances Friday at Circle in the Square downtown. Boesky is the son of Wall Street's noted Ivan Boesky. For those of you who would feel incomplete without seeing this, Richard Chamberlain's last performance as Professor Higgins in My Fair Lady is on Sunday. That's his final performance. Chamberlain will be succeeded by Michael Moriarty. It's official. Broadway's funny girl, Barbara Streisand, will be returning to New York for 3 concert appearances at Madison Square Garden in June. For those of you who would feel incomplete without seeing this, I suppose you'll just have to suffer. I suspect tickets are already sold out. And Gwen Verdon, Cheetah Rivera, Petula Clark, Marla Maples, and Tony Roberts will take part in the annual Broadway Easter Bonnet Competition Tuesday and Wednesday afternoons at the Minskov. All proceeds go to Broadway Fights AIDS. Easter Bonnet Competition with Tony Roberts? Well, let's showbiz. We'll be back with our trivia contest in a moment. We're back on the Broadway Hour, and it's trivia time. And the winner of this week's contest will win 2 tickets to Mort Saul's America and dinner for two at Streeter's here at the Sheraton. Here's the question. In a Tony Award-winning musical, a show-stopping number included these exquisite lyrics, quote, "Your pedal extremities are colossal. You look to me just like a fossil," end quote. Harry Hahn, you know who said that? Don't say it out if you know it. Okay, Harry's nodding yes. If you want to take a shot at the freebie theater tickets and dinners, send your answer to The Broadway Hour, WPAT 675 3rd Avenue, New York, New York, 10017. Last week's question was, a noted character actor in the movies who usually played a mean villain was in the original cast of Oklahoma, and in another Broadway musical, he introduced a classic song about corrupt New York City politics. Who was he? Harry, you know that one?
Howard Da Silva.
You're absolutely right. And Bruce Elting of New York City also knew that was the answer. Congratulations, Bruce. You win two tickets to She Loves Me, that sweetheart of a musical, and dinner for two at Bistro 790 here at the Sheraton. And now, ladies and gentlemen, from the original cast of Fiorello, here's Howard Da Silva recounting events that I'm semi-confident will not happen in the Giuliani administration. Here's a little tin box.
Your witness.
Mr. X, may we ask you a question? It's amazing, is it not, that the city pays you slightly less than $50 a week, yet you've purchased a private yacht.
I am positive your honor must be joking. Any working man can do what I have done. For a month or two, I simply gave up smoking, and I put my extra pennies one by one into a little tin box. A little tin box that a little tin key unlocks. There is nothing unorthodox about a little tin box.
About a little tin
about
box.
A little tin box.
In a little tin box. A little tin box that a little tin key unlocks.
There is honor and purity.
Lots of security. In a little tin box.
Next witness.
Mr. Y, we've been told you don't feel well, and we know you've lost your voice. But we wonder how you managed on the salary you make to acquire a new Rolls Royce.
You're implying I'm a crook, and I say no, sir. There is nothing in my past I care to hide. I've been taking empty bottles to the grocer, and each nickel that I got was put aside.
That he got was put aside.
Into a little tin box.
A little tin box that a little tin key unlocks.
There is nothing unorthodox about a little tin box.
About a little tin
about
box.
A little tin box.
In a little tin box, a little tin box, there's a cushion for life's rude shocks.
There is faith, hope, and charity.
Hard-won prosperity in a little tin box.
Next witness, take the stand.
Mr. Z, you're a junior official, and your income's rather low. Yet you've kept a dozen women in the very best hotels. Would you kindly explain how so?
I can see your honor doesn't pull his punches, and it looks a trifle fishy, I'll admit. But for one whole week I went without my lunches, and it mounted up your honor bit by bit.
Up your honor bit by bit.
It's just a little tin box.
A little tin box that a little tin key unlocks. There is nothing unorthodox about a little tin box.
About a little tin
about
box.
A little tin box.
It's a little tin box.
A little tin box. All a glitter with blue chip stocks.
There is something delectable,
almost respectable, in a little tin box. In a little tin box.
Howard Da Silva and the Little Tin Box from Fiorello. And that selection is on a marvelous new collection of CDs called Celebrate Broadway by RCA Victor. And we got a surprise just popped in. Is Harry Hahn, the columnist for Playbill magazine, who was on our program last week. And Harry, you predicted correctly all but one of the Oscar selections.
Yes, I haven't received enough abuse about that this week, and I came by to get some extra abuse from you.
The one you missed was?
The name was Anna Paquin.
Yes, Best Supporting Actress.
Yes, she's the little girl in the piano, and she was out of a list of 20 contenders. That would put her like 19, 20, undecided. You know, I'm so surprised she won, as was most people. You know, I can't really explain how that happened, but in about 6 months, the dust will settle, and I'll have the perfect reason.
Harry, did you watch the Oscar show?
I certainly did. I thought it was a really good show in terms of honest emotionalism. I thought it was one of the most emotional ceremonies in recent years. I don't actually remember being that moved that many times in the show.
Tom Hanks was really extraordinary.
Yes, you know, I thought what he did was an Olivier. A couple of years ago, Olivier won an honorary award, Oscar, his last Oscar, and he was there, and he sort of went up on his lines, and he started saying these grandiose words, and everybody was saying, my gosh, how great, you know, all the heart was swelling, and then he finished, and the camera shot to John Voight, who said, wow, and then if you play that back, the guy, it was gobbledygook with a British accent, and I thought that's what Tom Hanks did, but I played it back and forth, and his construction is great, and it's really wonderful. The thing about that speech that is so wonderful is that it was so heartfelt and so moving. I thought that was really outstanding.
Straight from the heart.
Yes, I know. And then plus Spielberg, plus seeing Deborah Carr again.
I also was struck by the producer of Schindler's List, one of the producers.
Yes, I
who
know.
Started off his acceptance speech by giving his concentration camp number.
Yes, you can't top that. That's an incredible story. That man is an incredible man, and isn't it great that he had that opportunity to spread the word like that?
One final note, Harry. Did you notice what the opening number was of the movie's biggest night of the year?
It was from Broadway.
A Broadway song.
Yes, Sondheim.
Putting It Together by Stephen Sondheim, that was sung by, what's her name? The blonde?
Bernadette
Peters. Yeah. Although Sondheim did rearrange those lyrics for the movie.
Yes.
Harry Hahn, ladies and gentlemen, who just popped by, and it's a treat to have you.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Broadway Hour. Thanks to our guests, Harry Hahn, Mayor Giuliani, Jerry Schoenfeld, and George Wachtel. The Broadway Hour is here on 93 WPAT every Monday night from 6 to 7. I'd like to thank the sponsors of the Broadway Hour, the Sheraton New York Hotel and Towers, and Champagne Tater, the official champagne of the Broadway Hour. Thanks to our executive producer, Kate McGrath, and our splendid engineer, Chris Breitfeldt. And special thanks to all the folks at 93 WPAT. Tune in next week when our guests will include, and listen to this, Mart Saul, Dorothy Loudon, and the jazz singer Annie Ross, who will be performing live. This is Stuart Klein for the Broadway Hour. Good night and break a leg.